Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Go. Vipra, Devata, Vridha, Ro Vipra, Devata, Vidha, Ro Vipra, Devata, Vridha, Gurun, Bhutani, Savasha, Gurun, Bhutani, Savasha, Gurun, Bhutani, Savasha, Ro Vipra Devata Vridha Gurun Bhutani Savasha Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Mangalani Samasvishat Mangalani Samasvishat Mangalani Samasvishat Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Mangalani Samasvishat Govipra Devata Vidha Gurun Bhutani Sarvasha Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Mangalani Samasvishat Go Vipra Devata Vridha Gurun Bhutani Sarvasha Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Mangalani Samashvishat Namaskrityatma Sambhuti Mangalani Samaspishat. Ladies, O Vipra Devata Vridha masters. It's interesting here, it says Gurun, as we know that prayer Sri Guru and Vaishnavam's chants, offering obeisances to the spiritual masters, plural. However, the tendency is that we offer obeisances just to our own spiritual master. So here we see, this is stressing the importance, and we see all throughout, you know, Vaishnava and Vedic literature, the importance is stressed of the spiritual masters, meaning not just one's Diksha Guru, but also one's Siksha Gurus, because we see that there are many people who guide us on the path of spiritual life. And all these people play a significant role in our lives. And not just people. We see in the story, I believe it's the story of the Avanti Brahmana, how he was accepting so many different persons as his spiritual master, just like he was seeing the bee as his guru, because the bee was going around and getting nectar from all these different places. And that's how the bee makes honey, as they collect nectar from all over the place. Or we see there's that story of Prahlad Maharaj, when he was travelling around, he came across this Brahmana who was taking, I forgot the detail of the story, but he came across this sadhu who was lying on the ground. He was taking I think it's called a Jagravritti, I can't remember the name of it, something like that, where he's taking the mood of the python. You know, it means just whatever comes. The python just waits on the tree, and whatever comes, it eats it. It doesn't go hunting for food. Whatever comes along, it just drops on it, crushes it, and eats it. You know? So he was taking that mood. So we see that even within nature, you know, not just amongst the devotional community, but even within nature, even we see amongst people, you know, around us, even like the materialists. We see, I remember, you know, Prabhupada would talk about, you know, like the dog. The dog has certain, even though a dog is a very, very low-born living entity, you know, you don't have to tell you too much about dogs to understand that they're very low-born. You know, they like sniffing each other's backsides. They like eating stool. You know, they're urinating all over the place. They'll have sex out in the street in public. No discrimination whatsoever. But still, they have good qualities, a quality that we can benefit from learning. What is that quality? Faithfulness. Yeah, even if you kick them, they'll come back. Yeah? A dog is so loyal and faithful to its master that even the master beats it or kicks it, it still comes back wagging its tail. So it's like that when we're serving Krishna, that even though we may get kicked in the material world, and we get kicked and kicked and kicked and kicked all the time, but still we come back. We stay fixed at Krishna's feet. And actually, we were just chanting Shastastikam before. And the last prayer of Shastastikam, Srimati Radharani prays to Krishna, you know, that I know no one but Krishna is my Lord. And he shall remain so, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me broken hearted by not being present before me. He's completely free to do anything and everything. For he's always my worshipful Lord unconditionally. So this is like, not saying that we should become dogs, but this is like the nature of the dog. It's like even if the master treats the dog harshly, the dog is faithful and loyal. Yeah? So it's very important that we understand this. And you see this word gurun, what's that, the Mangala Chan, same thing, that word gurun is used there. It talks about the spiritual masters. Or we see in the first canto of the Bhagavatam that Sutta Goswami is being glorified as you have learnt, you know, you've got the blessings from your spiritual masters, you have learnt from your spiritual masters, plural. Very important to remember this, it's plural, not just the one person. Because when we focus on one person, what is that? It's a cult. You see, like, you know, they have these rock stars, or they have these, like, you know, sometimes you see these, like, these different so-called religious groups, because they're not actually religious groups, or they have a charismatic leader. And people will just like focus on this charismatic leader. I'm not really interested in the philosophy of that particular group. That's completely irrelevant. It's just the charismatic leader. Rock stars, movie stars, sports stars. It's just a charismatic personality. So if we take the same mood in devotional service, we're just actually caught up by the person. And what's the value of the person? They have no value unless they're following the process of devotional service. And if that person gives up the process of devotional service, where's the value then? So it's the process of devotional service which is wonderful, because through the process of devotional service, we're able to connect to Krishna. And if we're following persons who are connected to the process of devotional service, then also we become connected to the process of devotional service, and we become connected to Krishna. And so we see, it's not just on the person. It can't just, you know, it doesn't become a person, you know, we've got to be careful to avoid this tendency. Because the nature of human beings in this world is we have our frailties. People are weak and insecure. That's our basic nature. We're very insecure in this world because we never know, you know, what's going to happen. And we see that people, you know, they're worried about where the next meal's coming from, they're worried about where they're going to live, they're worried about, you know, or will I get attacked, you know. And actually, this is real. I mean, something happened, I was just listening to the radio news the other day, and in Carlton, a couple of days ago, you know, someone pulled up at the traffic lights, and this gang of youths, ten of them there was, right, attacked the car. So the guy, he locked the doors, he had central locking, so he locked the doors and all the doors locked. And so what they did is they broke a window with a brick, just to punch him, you know, just to attack him. They didn't know him. You know, so this is quite prevalent. It's becoming more and more prevalent. I remember I was in South Africa. Vijay's just gone out. I was in South Africa. He would know about this. He's from Mauritius. I was in South Africa. And in South Africa, it's quite common that someone will pull up at the traffic lights, you know, a little bit out in the country or something, you know, and there'll be like an embankment or something. They'll pull up the traffic lights waiting for the lights to change in a nice car, BMW, Mercedes-Benz, something. And someone will come over the hill with a gun, get out of the car. And they steal the car. It's common. Happens every day. And so Kali Yuga is you would have heard of this, right? You're from Mauritius. You know what goes on in South Africa. Kali Yuga is becoming more and more like this. It's not uncommon. So people are very, very fearful. So then it's just like at school, you know, like you always, you know, at least I know I did, take shelter of the big guy, because then you feel protected. Yeah? So the tendency is like that in Kali Yuga. If you see someone who's got, you know, qualities that you aspire for, someone who's rich, and who doesn't want to be rich in this world? Everyone wants to be rich. So what is it? You know, you get all these people, these wealthy people, become the celebrities, isn't it? Just because they can afford to buy, you know, more expensive clothes, not necessarily better clothes. Just because they can afford to buy more expensive cars and you know, and go to all these fancy nightclubs and basically behave like foolish people, really. Then they're considered to be, oh, this is, we aspire for this. You know? But actually you look at them, you know, they talk very loudly, they laugh very loudly, they get intoxicated. And people aspire for these qualities. You know, they think because they're talking loudly, making a fool of themselves, they're actually having a good time. And the reason I was thinking this is like last night, just as we were going to bed, we usually open up our window to let the fresh air blow through the house before we go to bed. And there's this limousine pulled up just down the sand, you know, the sandbar here at the end of Mill Street. And a whole group of women got out, and they're just like, so much, you know, you couldn't see them, but you could hear them. You know, and this is actually considered, Vedically speaking, this is a person of low quality. You know, someone who laughs loudly in mixed company, this is also considered to be, you know, not very good behaviour. Someone who talks loudly in mixed company, not very good behaviour. You see, in Vedic culture, and this is what Krishna is doing here. He's demonstrating to us what is Vedic culture. Because he says in the Gita, you know, that if I did not act properly, then all the world would be put into ruin. So he's giving us the direction. He's showing us how to act. And Vedic culture is a very, very refined culture. It's the culture that's meant to take us back to Godhead. Everything in Vedic culture is actually directed towards Krishna, directed towards helping us to surrender to Krishna. So we see that, you know, in this world people are aspiring, you know, because like the whole media thing, the media hype sort of builds up these things to be bigger than they really are, make them larger than life, these people, they're so, you know, portrayed as being so wonderful. You know, like almost like they'll never die, they have no problems in their life. But if you actually get to see what their lives are like, they're no different from your life or my life, except they've got lots of money. Or they're famous. There's no different. You know, I mean, look at the movie stars. I mean, how many divorces do they have? How many times have they been married? You know? So is this an indication they have a happy life? They need to be married, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times? Is this a happy life? I don't think so. Yet people still aspire for this. So the thing is, because people are insecure in this material world, because it is a very, very dangerous bit. Badam badam yad vipadam na tesham. Danger at every step. Every single step you take in this world, there is some kind of danger. You never know what is going to happen. You can just step out the front of the temple, you know, to cross the road, not look to the right, not see the car, boom, you're dead. You know, one of the buses, I mean, because some, you've got to be careful here. I mean, some of these cars, they speed up and down so fast and they don't look. You know? So the thing is, you, at any moment you could die. And people are fearful. You know, some people are actually aware of how dangerous the situation is. So they're fearful. So they're looking for someone to take shelter of. This is the nature. Everyone's looking for someone. They're looking for heroes. Everyone's looking for someone to take shelter of. Therefore, when they see some person who has qualities they aspire for, then they follow that person. And this is quite common. This is like, it's so widespread in the material world. But let's not bring this same weakness into the practice of devotional service. Understand, what is it in devotional service that makes someone a person to aspire to follow? What really is it we're aspiring to follow? We're aspiring to follow their devotional qualities. And how do they gain these devotional qualities? By the practice of Vaidisadhana Bhakti, by following the devotional process. This is what gives them the quality, is the devotional process. So rather than being caught up in the personality, let's become absorbed in the process. And you'll see that those persons who have qualities we aspire for, how is it they have those qualities? Because they have become absorbed in the devotional process. You look at any advanced Vaishnava, they've become advanced because of their absorption in the devotional process. And this is, you know, it's very important as we see, it's always emphasized, gurun, plural. It means Diksha Guru, means Siksha Guru, means Bhatma Pradakshana Guru. There's so many different gurus are there. Bhutani, to all living beings. Savasha, all. Namaskritya, offering obeisances. Atma, to his own. Sambhuti, expanded manifestations. Mangalani, auspicious things, such as a brown cow. Samaspishat, he touched. Translation. Lord Krishna would offer obeisances to the cows, brahmanas and demigods, his elders and spiritual masters, and all living beings, all of whom are expansions of his supreme personality. Then he would touch auspicious things. Please repeat. Lord Krishna would offer obeisances to the cows, brahmanas and demigods, his elders and spiritual masters, and all living beings, all of whom are expansions of his supreme personality. Then he would touch auspicious things. So it's very interesting, this section of the Bhagavatam, how we see that Lord Krishna is performing what some people may misunderstand to be just common worldly activities. You see that, you know, he's getting up in the morning when the rooster crows, and his wives, they would curse the roosters. Why are they crowing in the morning? You know, why don't they just be quiet so I can enjoy the embrace of my husband, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, like that, you know. And how he's going out and he's performing his morning duties, his ablutions and stuff like that. And just, it seems like they're all just ordinary activities. And we see that Krishna, as I explained, I think the last time I was giving class here, was Krishna's, he's expert. Everything he does has many results. So he's performing these activities. One thing that happens is like materialistic people become bewildered and they think, oh, you're just glorifying this Krishna, you're worshipping this Krishna. You see, he's just an ordinary man. He gets up in the morning, he performs meditation, he does all these different, you know, activities like everyone else does. He's just an ordinary man. So the atheists become bewildered. Naham prakashasa vasa yogamayas mudoyang nabijanati, Krishna says. They never understand me. They can never know me. So the foolish persons, Krishna makes arrangements. You know, as he says, savascha charham hirishana vishno matas smriti jnanam apohanam cha. that I'm seated in the heart of all living beings, and from me come knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. If someone wants to forget Krishna, he makes the arrangement. And it's interesting because we see, you know, someone who wants to forget Krishna can use this pastime and say, look, see, he's an ordinary person. Why should I worship him? He's just another ordinary person. Someone who wants to remember Krishna can use exactly the same pastime and think, look, see how wonderful Krishna is. Look what he's doing. He's performing these pastimes to demonstrate to us, to show us how to live our lives. But of course, Krishna does it a little bit differently. Instead of, you know, like we meditate upon Krishna, Krishna meditates upon himself. Of course, we don't follow the path of Krishna. So we see that Krishna's activities are multifaceted, and he's achieving, or he's accomplishing many different things with each activity. And, you know, we see here how he's giving in charity. He's saying he's bathing in sanctified water. He dressed himself in lower and upper garments. And actually, this is also part of Vedic culture. You know, we see it's quite common in this society that people like walking around naked. But actually, this is considered, you know, Vedically to not to be human life. You know, a human being will always dress themselves properly. And even like the upper cloth, like a man should have lower and upper cloth. This is considered to be proper. You know? So saying here how Krishna would dress himself in lower and upper garments and perform the entire sequence of prescribed rituals beginning with worship at dawn. After offering oblations to the sacred fire, Krishna would silently chant the Gayatri Mantra. This is the first Gayatri. So you see Krishna's performing all these different activities, and then each day he's worshipping the rising sun, and he's offering making offerings to the demigods, the sages, the forefathers. Then he'd worship his elders and the brahmanas and offer them herds of tame and peaceful cows with gold-plated horns and pearl necklaces. You see, he's offering to the brahmanas so much opulence. You know, generally, like, you know, when you offer a cow in charity, it's considered that you should give a cow who's got her first calf. This is the best. Why is that? Yeah, she's giving milk. Yeah, and it's not like she's old and tired, you know, because usually when the first calf, if you look after the cow properly, then you can milk them for many years after that. If they're happy, they'll give milk for many years. I've known people who've had cows who've given milk for 20 years. You know, if they're looked after properly, they feel cared for, they feel loved, and they'll just give milk, they just keep giving and giving. And for the brahmana, the milk is important, because he uses it to worship Krishna. You use it for cooking, you use it for bathing. You bathe the shalagram with milk, things like that. You can make sweet rice with it. You see, in the Narad Pancharatra, it talks about this payash is kind of like a runny sweet rice made with milk and rice and sugar, and all the offerings of this payash, which is very, very important in the different offerings. And you know, and the cows were also not just like niggardly old, poor-looking cows. Like sometimes you see people when they give charity. It's like often like they'll give you a computer, they'll give you their old computer which is just about ready to die, or they'll give you some charity of something that's worn out and they can't use it anymore. But actually this is not really charity, this is just disposing of your unwanted goods, you know, you just can't be bothered taking it down to the dumpster or something, you just give it to a brahmana and then he throws it in the dumpster, you know. So it's actually, this is insulting the brahmanas. Because we see here Krishna setting the example, the brahmana, we give them first class charity. And not just did he give an ordinary cow that didn't have children, was old and worn out. No, he gave a cow with its first calf. Actually, not one cow, he gave 13,000 cows. And they all had gold-plated horns and silver-plated hooves. So they're very, very great opulence. And this is actually the way the brahmanas are meant to be respected. So Krishna's showing us here, and he's saying that the cows were providers of abundant milk. They had each given birth only once and were accompanied by their calves. Daily the Lord gave many groups of 13,084 cows to the learned brahmanas. Every day he gave many. Because in the verse there it's saying this budva. This word budva means this number of cows. Budva, budva, dine, dine, again and each day. Dine, dine means day after day. Dine, or dina means day. So dine, dine, day after day, he just gave this, so many cows like this. So Krishna's setting the example here of how, you know, that someone should act in Krishna consciousness. Actually, someone with money, someone who's in a leadership position. Krishna is saying this is how they should act. They should use their wealth for the service of the Vaishnavas, for the service of Krishna. Otherwise this wealth, this opulence will bring about their downfall, because what happens is, like, in earning wealth one becomes attached to the money, to the results of the money. But by giving in charity, then one actually becomes detached. And it's described in the scriptures how different persons, they become purified in their activities. Just like with a brahmachari. A brahmachari becomes purified by performance of yajna. You know, whether it's sankirtan yajna, fire yajna, whatever, deity worship. So a brahmachari, brahmacharini, they become purified by this performance of yajna. Whereas a grihastha becomes purified by giving in charity. This is actually the varna, or the varna, or the duty, you know, of the grihastha is to give in charity. You know, the sannyasi's duty is to travel and preach. The sannyasi, as described, that just like the flowing river, you know, you see with rivers when they're stagnant, the water is impure. But when the river is flowing, then the water is very pure. So the sannyasi is the same. By traveling and preaching, this is how the sannyasi maintains his purity. Because what happens if a sannyasi stays in one place, the tendency is there that he can become attached to his room, to his facilities, to having the same service every day. But the best thing for a sannyasi is to, you know, especially this stage they call parivrajak. A parivrajak is one who's traveling constantly. And they will travel constantly and preach, and this way they maintain their purity because they don't become attached to various facilities. So we see in different ashrams, there's different types of duties that are performed. And the same for different varnas, there's different duties that are performed, which help us to develop our Krishna consciousness. So Krishna here, he's showing the duty. He had so much wealth. Incredible. I mean, you know, obviously Krishna has unlimited wealth. But even in his role, or he was acting a role of, as a grihastha, a Chakriya Grihastha, and he was showing how to live his life, and he was giving so much in wealth every day to the brahmanas. Not just giving it foolishly to anyone, just like, you know, you can walk down Collins Street or Swanson Street or some street in the city, you'll see people sitting on the street begging. You know, and they've got a little thing out and say, you know, they've got this sign, they're looking very miserly and miserly, and they're looking down, oh, you know, I'm so wretched and fallen, please give me some money. And I mean, obviously we want to have compassion upon people in situations like that, you know, because they are in a difficult situation. But to give them money is not having compassion, because what do they do with the money? Will they go around to Gopal's and buy some prasadam? Of course not. Most likely, I'm not saying guarantee, but most likely they will go and buy a cup of coffee, they'll go buy a pack of cigarettes, they'll go buy a bottle of beer, a bottle of whiskey. They'll spend it on intoxication, which will then cause them to become further and further entangled in this material world. And it will also cause you to become entangled in this material world, because you've given them the money to do that. So in Chaupati they have a very interesting system. I don't know if it's still going on, but there's a grihastha couple there who were making up these packets of prasadam. Just like dried prasadam. It was all maha prasadam. It was offered to the deities. They make up these little packets of prasadam. And then devotees, when they're going up, because when you travel around Bombay, every single traffic light you pull up at, who's been to Bombay here? A few devotees. You know what it's like? Every single traffic light, there's someone knocking on the window. Bakshish, bakshish. Yeah? It's unbelievable. Bombay's a really incredible place like that. And so devotees, they give them prasadam. Because you know that by giving them prasadam, they're actually getting eternal benefit. Yeah? And also, if they are genuinely hungry, then they're getting fed also. But, you know, in a lot of places, I mean, you won't see it so much here in Australia, but a lot of places, particularly India, you'll get it in England also, throughout Europe, you get professional beggars. Like, right throughout Europe, you get the gypsies, they travel all around Europe, and they're just professional beggars. They're actually very, very wealthy. I remember when I was in Poland, lived in Poland for about 7 years, and, you know, we were driving down, you see, like, these really weird-looking houses. And the devotees, so I said, oh yeah, that's so-and-so, he's the king of the gypsies. Very, very huge, big houses, but they're built kind of like medieval castles with the spires and all the turrets and things like that, you know. And they're very, very wealthy people, you know, and they basically live by begging and different sort of, you know, things like that. But, yeah, so if you actually want to benefit people, then, you know, poor people like this, then you give them prasadam, because, you know, as it's described in the Gita, that there's charity in the different modes of nature, and charity in the mode of goodness is giving to a qualified person at a suitable time. So obviously the qualified person is a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, one who's engaged in the service of Krishna. This is the proper person to give charity to. So Krishna, we see here that Krishna is giving charity to the Brahmanas, and he's worshipping the cows. See, the cows and the Brahmanas are like the pillars of Vedic society. Cow protection. We take care of the cows. We look after the cows. We feed them. We keep them suitably housed, etc., to make sure that we don't kill them. This is probably one of the primary functions of cow protection, is to see that they have a peaceful life and that they don't have this threat of death hanging over their heads. They're well cared for, etc., like that. So cow protection and worship of the Brahmanas, these are the two pillars of Vedic culture. And so we see here that Krishna, he's giving that example. He's offering his obeisance to the cows, he's offering obeisance to the Brahmanas and the demigods. His elders, he respects his elders. And even for us as devotees, there's a story where I think it may have been Giriraj Maharaj's mother, when she came to the temple. Prabhupada had Giriraj Maharaj offer his obeisances to his mother. Even though she, our terms, you might say, oh, she's just a meat-eating demon. But still, the fact is that it's his mother. And we respect our mothers. We respect our parents. We respect our elders. And we respect all our elders like that. Just like we see when Mahatma is in India for a few months now. But, he's an older Vaishnava. So just automatically, because he's older, we just offer respect. This is part of the culture. And his good wife also, and the spiritual masters. So that means obviously that means the Diksha Guru, but it also means Siksha Guru. Just like every day we're worshiping Srila Prabhupada, he's the preeminent Siksha Guru for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We worship him every day. He's our founder Acharya. But not just Srila Prabhupada, not just like prominent, Diksha Guru or Siksha Gurus, but also all Siksha Gurus we respect. Anyone who's giving us guidance in spiritual life, anyone who's helping us come closer to Krishna, we understand this to be Siksha Guru, whether it's the temple president, whether it's the devotee giving the Bhagavatam class, whether it's our temple commander, whatever it is, someone who's giving us guidance, which is helping us to approach closer to Krishna, that's glorious. That someone can help us come closer to Krishna. This is wonderful. Therefore, we respect these persons because they're helping me. Prabhuji, thank you so much. You're helping me understand more about who I am. You're helping me understand how I can serve Krishna better. Isn't this wonderful? That we can serve, like I'm serving Krishna now like this, then someone comes along and explains something to me and I can do a better job for the pleasure of Krishna. This is wonderful. Therefore, we respect persons who are able to assist us like that. Anyone who can help us. And then it goes on to describe, and all living beings. Krishna's offering his obeisances to, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's offering his obeisances to all living beings to show us. He's teaching us by his personal example, teaching us humility. Because in order to offer obeisances to all living beings, this requires humility. So Krishna, by his personal example, is showing us how to live our lives. And then it goes on describing, then he would touch auspicious things. And we see that, what was I reading? I was reading something about that this morning. Maybe it is in here. Decorate his body, the very honor of humans. Then he would look at ghee, a mirror, cows and bulls, the brahmanas and the demigods, and siddha, the members of all the social classes. So, it's considered when we offer arati to the deities, this has different functions. It's a style of worship. We're offering all these various things to the Lord to worship him. Like incense is nice smell, the lamps is considered illumination, different things like that. What else? Water in the conch. So this water in the conch is what they call argya. And the argya I think it's in probably about chapter 8 in the first canto in a transliteration there. It talks about the synonyms. It talks about how this arti water is water for reception. So you see sometimes when you go to these very, very high class functions, that they when a person comes, they sprinkle water on their head. And sometimes it'll have mustard seeds and durva grass, and we call it couch grass in Australia. It grows all around the world, durva grass, very auspicious. Milk, yogurt, a few drops of milk, a few drops of yogurt, all these different auspicious ingredients. And you sprinkle it upon their head. And this is actually considered to be very, very auspicious reception. When Yudhisthira Maharaj, when he was receiving Narad Muni into his palace, he sent the Brahmanas and asked them to bring the Arghya water. And they sprinkled this on Narad Muni's head. And when Narad Muni received the Arghya water, he bowed his head to receive the Arghya water. And he felt very satisfied that he'd been nicely received. And so this is when we offer the water in the conch, that's what it's for. Arghya, then we offer a cloth. Same thing, when you go to a high class function, you'll see. I remember I was at Radha Govinda Temple some years ago on Vasant Panchami, which is the first day of spring. And they have the local pundits, the king's guru, I guess he was, the pundit there. And they would sit down in front, in Radha Govinda they've got this big Adha Mandap or stage area at the front, where they perform some of the festivals. And so they were all sitting along the edge there, and they would come and offer them a chata as a present. So when you offer the cloth in the arti, it's considered to be like offering a cloth as a presentation. And then also chamra. This is to drive away flies. It's very, very regal as well. So it has they have their practical function. But also all these items, they have the function of it's called nirjana. So nirjana means to wave auspicious things. Drishti means you see. So when someone's seeing auspicious things, it's actually very good for them, and it can assist in removing inauspicious influence. Just like when we do Rupa Goswami, he describes in the Jamatiti Vidhi, which is how to follow Janmashtami. It's a very, very elaborate procedure for following Janmashtami. So there he describes quite an elaborate Abhishek, which if anyone who's seen the Abhishekas in Mayapur, basically we follow this system from Rupa Goswami. But then at the end, there's this drishti you offer to the deity, which is usually supposed to be nim fruit, but nim leaves are easy to get. White mustard, nim, rock salt, and a couple of other things, I don't remember them all. And the idea is you wave them in front of the deity, and the idea is they absorb all the, as a drishti, and they absorb all the inauspicious glances. Because, sometimes people, they see the Lord being worshipped, and they may think, why are they pouring all this opulence on this doll? Just like when we did the Panchatantra installation, it was almost 2 lakh rupees for all the ingredients. 2 lakh means about $6,000 Australian, for all the ingredients the deity was bathed in. And there's one point when the deities were bathed in this bright orangey red substance, and that was just saffron. That was just saffron ground up in ghee, ground up in sandalwood paste, and then mixed with sugar water. And devotees, who were sitting in the temple room, they could actually smell all these aromas that were coming from the deities, from the kush. It was just, the green one was just kush oil. It was about a litre of kush oil, which is, I think a litre of kush oil is about 18,000 rupees. Very expensive, it was ground into the sandalwood paste, turned it green, And so people, they see all this opulence, and they look at the deity, and they think, why are they wasting all this money on this statue? People think like that, So, the devotees are very, very protective of Krishna, so they offer these things which will remove the effect. Or you see, at the start of the Abhishek, I'm sure you've seen it, we cover the deities in this white paste, which is made from ground up sesame seeds. So it's the same idea. It's meant to remove the effect of inauspicious glances. Of course, how can an inauspicious glance affect Krishna? How can anything affect Krishna? But this is the mood of the devotee. The devotee wants to protect. This is the mood of love the devotee has for the Lord. He wants to protect the Lord from these inauspicious things. So the same thing is when we're offering arti, these things also have the function of offering things that are very pleasing to see, like a chamra. You wash the chamra, the very, very beautiful colour. Or you wave the water in the conch. The conch is also considered to be very auspicious. Conch, very auspicious to see. The lamp. There's a prayer. I can't remember the prayer. Svaprakasha or something. That the pujaris they can chant when they're offering the lamp. And it describes how the lamp is the most auspicious of all presentations, and it illuminates both within and without. It's describing how, you know, it gives illumination within, meaning knowledge. So the lamp represents knowledge as well. There's many, many, you know, there's much symbolism and significance of all these items that are being offered to the artist. The lamp's representing knowledge. And we're waving it in front of Krishna. It's a very auspicious thing. The incense, very pleasing, auspicious, you know, creates an auspicious atmosphere. So we're doing this drishti for Krishna. So same thing, it's like here we see how Krishna, he's looking upon these auspicious things, you know, to make his day auspicious. So it's the same for us, you know, like when we wake up in the morning, what do you want to do? Look at the newspaper? Listen to the news? You know, you walk down the street here at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, like people are getting ready to go to work, and what do? They've got the television on, they're watching Good Morning Australia, whatever it's called. Yeah? Is this auspicious? They wake up in the morning, they hear about, you know, flood in this country, fire in that country, this thing, that thing, you know? Not at all auspicious. Yeah? But no, you wake up in the morning, you offer obeisances to the spiritual master, you know, and then you go take darshan, maybe, you know, I mean, hopefully all the grihasthas have some kind of altar at home, and they go and take darshan of their deities, you know, take darshan of Krishna. You know, pictures of Radha Balava and Jagannath Balasubhadramayi and Shishi Gaurinathai. And here in the temple, the devotees, they wake up in the morning, you know, chant Hare Krishna, offer obeisance to the spiritual master, have a shower, come take the darshan of the deities. So we look upon auspicious things. And by looking upon auspicious things, it helps us to remove inauspicious influences, helps to make our life auspicious. But beyond auspicious, helps to make our life transcendental. Because Lord Brahma, he said, it's in the Bhagavatam, I don't remember exactly where, but he's praying to Krishna, he says, this concept of auspicious and inauspicious in the material world is simply mental speculation. Because everything in this material world is inauspicious. It's the whole manifestation is inauspicious. But if we're connecting ourselves to Krishna, then this actually makes everything auspicious. And so if we wake up in the morning and we're seeing Krishna, we're chanting the Guru's name in pranam prayers, we're chanting Krishna's name, then this makes our life auspicious. And we see here how he's saying how he would touch auspicious items. He would touch auspicious things. So when there's any religious ceremony being done, like you're doing an Abhishek or something like that, you know, a major Abhishek like Janmashtami or Gopanim or maybe Kastan Yatra or something like that, there's a ceremony you can do the evening before called an Adivas. It's a very nice ceremony. What you do is you have all these different ingredients. I've actually got a list of them here. I thought you might be interested to hear about the different things that are offered in Adivas. Ganga Mad, Chandan, you know, mud from the Ganges, taken from the bank of the Ganges. Chandan, sandalwood paste, or actually a stick of chandan, stone, rice paddy, durva grass. As I mentioned, if you go at the back here near the Tulsi house, there's durva grass growing there. We call it kooch. Flowers, fruit, yogurt, ghee, swastika, usually silver swastika. You can get them made up of silver, or you get a plate, a silver plate, and you draw a swastika on it with kumkum. Sindur, the red stuff the ladies put on here. Conch, very auspicious. Kajal, the black things they put in the eyes. And kajal is interesting. It's just made from when you burn a ghee lamp, yeah, and the soot that comes off it. You know, sometimes they'll put a plate above it and they'll get that soot. So either you burn a ghee lamp, it's warming, you burn a camphor lamp, it's cooling, so you can get two different types of soot there. Rochan. Rochan means it comes from the pituitary gland. In a cow, like you get this, you can get a cheap one in India, which is not real. It's just like imitation. But you get the real stuff, and it's said it's got to like rain on a certain constellation on the cow's head and all this kind of stuff, you know. And they get this stuff from the, it's really expensive stuff. White mustard seeds, gold, silver. Actually, when they did the Adivas for the, it's kind of funny. When they did the Adivas for the Panchatattva, I got to offer the gold coin. And I wanted off the gold coin, you know why? Because it was a gold Australian coin. It had a kangaroo on the back. So I said, I'll do that one. Anyhow. So, you know, it was just a gold coin. I actually got gold and silver coins at home, which I use for Adivasas. Copper, lamp, mirror, fragrant oil, turmeric, cloth, thread, chamra, sandalwood, and all on a plate. So the idea is those items, you show them to the deity's head, you touch them to his waist, you touch them to his feet. Then you show them to Tulsi, you touch them to the ground. And you do that with all those, so you're actually worshipping, you're showing them the auspicious items. And you do that with all these items, and then you put them all on a plate, and then you show the plate, and then the idea is they touch the plate like that, and take darshan of all these auspicious items. So Krishna would also, he would do these things. Showing us, you know, how to make our lives auspicious. Like when you see a great personality, an acharya is one who teaches by example. They live their life. There's this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that describes that those who are born in Bhart Varsh or Bhart Bhumi should give their life for the benefit of others. Should perform the, it says this para upakar, the supreme welfare activity. Now, sometimes we hear that this verse, like when Prabhupada was preaching to a room full of Indians, you know, Indian bodied people, he would say, this is referring to you because you are from Bhart. But actually, if you take it in the broader sense, if you look at the description that's given in the fifth canto, Bhart Varsh means the whole world. So we're all from Bhart Bhumi. So actually our duty is that we give our lives for the benefit of others. And how do we do that? It starts by, what's the first thing we need? Achar. Behavior. We need, Prabhupada would say, he said, was it? I've forgotten the verse. It's a really nice verse he mentions. That he says, first your behavior must become ideal, then you can preach. No, it's just a little Vedic aphorism Prabhupada would often quote. Apani achari prabhuji veda sikhaya. It's Bengali actually. So it says, apani achari. Apani means that's respectful address. Achari, your behavior. Prabhu, you have to become a master. Become ideal. Jivera sikhaya. Then you can preach to other living entities. So sometimes it said, acha, then vicha, then pracha. Yeah? So acha means behavior. Vicha means realization. Pracha means preaching. So the supreme welfare activity we can do in this life is actually to live our lives in an ideal way so that people become inspired by us. Yeah? What's the point? It's just like, I remember when I was a child, my mother was always telling me, don't take drugs, don't smoke, don't do this, don't do that. But she was always drinking alcohol, she was always smoking cigarettes herself. So they're empty words. So if we're out there and we're telling people, oh, you know, this devotional process is so wonderful, you know, you need to live your life like this, you need to live your life like that, etc., etc., but we ourselves are not living that life, will they become convinced? But if we are able to live that ideal life, then this becomes inspiring. They think, oh, this is very nice. He's taking this so seriously. Yeah? And you see that if you take something very seriously, you speak to someone, they say, oh, yes, he's taking this very seriously. This must be important. Let me have a look at this. This, just by our serious application to the process of devotional service, by seriously trying to live our lives like this, this will inspire people. Yeah? And by the process, the devotional process, we will become more purified, we will become detached, we will develop all devotional qualities, we'll make advancement in spiritual life. So it's like it's a very interwoven type of a thing. It's not like you just, you know, I was speaking with the guru last night, he was asking about, you know, do we follow the devotional process or we become detached? Which one do we do first? No, it's a whole interwoven thing. You can't sort of have one without the other. We need to follow the devotional process. You know, like Krishna says, the guru was quoting that verse, by constant practice and detachment. The practice helps us to become detached. The detachment helps the practice. It's not that you can separate one from the other. Both need to be there. So in the devotional process, we need to focus on becoming ideal persons. Not that we just go out and preach and behave like a bunch of Australian yobbos. You know, this is, what's the difference between us and them? If our behavior, just, I'll give you a really interesting example. There was a story. Vyasaki told this for Prabhupada's disappearance day in Potomac years ago. I'd never heard this story before. Prabhupada was traveling on a plane and there was a group of sports people, I think they were footballers. You know, they just apparently won their game or something like that, and they were reveling on the plane and making lots of noise. It was actually in those days they had smoking and non-smoking sections on the plane. They were in the non-smoking section. And they were drinking alcohol and they were smoking cigarettes. So Prabhupada's servant complained to the hostess about it, and she went over and asked them to not smoke cigarettes, so they stopped smoking. And then this happened a couple of times, and the same thing. And then Prabhupada's servant at one point got so frustrated, he said, "I'm going to go and tell them myself." And Prabhupada said, "Sit down." He said, "If we cannot tolerate, we are no better than them." So the thing is, like their behavior is bad, and if we also exhibit bad behavior, what's the difference? We need to develop ideal behavior. Because ideal behavior is what will influence people. Of course, you can give them money, et cetera, and all these types of things. But will that change their heart? Because really, the process of preaching means changing the heart of the person. And you change a person's heart by ideal behavior, not just by telling them that you should do this, you should do that. That will not change anyone's heart. You change a person's heart, you change their value system by when they're seeing that you've also had this value. If they see you live the values you're preaching, that will affect them much more so than just you telling them. Of course, an intelligent person will see, yes, what he's saying is correct, even though he doesn't follow it himself. As we were talking before about the different, the Avanti Brahmana, how he took on these different gurus. Even though they were not following the ideal path, he saw, no, but what they're doing here is good. I can learn from this. I can learn to be like the bee. I can learn to be like the swan. I can learn to be like so many different gurus he accepted. So it is important for us, as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is a preaching mission, it's important for us to develop ideal behavior, to give up our conditioning, because we're not Australian, we're not Indian, we're not whatever. Our position is eternal servants of Krishna. And Krishna, he's showing us here the culture of the spiritual world. This is what we're aspiring to achieve. And that's why deity worship is such an amazing thing, because deity worship is manifesting the culture of the spiritual world. For devotees who have the opportunity to participate in the deity worship, you learn. It's not just some ritual that we're going through, I offer this, I offer that. Oh, why do you do that? Because it's in the book. If that's the reason you do it, then it's just a ritual. No, understand what it is you're doing. We're acting in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. The acharyas give us 64 items of worship. Why? These items are pleasing to Krishna. These items are about the culture of the spiritual world. This is how to worship someone. This is how to please someone. This is how to get their blessings. In the morning, the pujaris, especially the Shalagram pujari, but also for Radha and Krishna, they sit down, they offer 16 items of worship to the deity. So these items, this is how a cultured society receives a person, how they worship a person, how they satisfy the person. They start off, they offer them, they please sit down. And they offer them some sweet words. And just, have you had a nice trip? Just like you would, any of the devotees here from India, when their parents come, you treat them very nicely. You come and you ask them to, sit down, you take care of all the needs, you speak to them sweetly and ask them, is there anything you need? This is what's called swagatam, welcome. You welcome the person. It's just natural. You go to the airport, you greet them at the airport, you offer them a garland, offer them some chandan, some mahaprasadam. This is greeting a person. This is part of Vedic culture. Then you sit them down, you bathe their feet. Because when someone's, Padya is especially, bathing the feet is especially done when someone's travelled a long distance. Because it's actually very refreshing. I don't know if you've ever had your feet bathed, but it's very refreshing. And then, the Arya water, etc. There's a whole beginning, the first, seven items of worship. It's all about receiving a person and making them happy to stay there. Why? Because you want to worship them. You want to worship them because you want them to bless you. You want them to be, satisfied with you. So the whole idea is when you do an installation, it's like that and like that. So the first idea is, first, you please come, then please stay. Because if he doesn't stay, how can you worship him? So the idea is you make Krishna happy. Then you, you know, offer him, bathe him and offer him clothes and jewelry and stuff like that. And then you offer worship. There's like chandan, flowers, incense, lamp, something to eat. This is considered worship. And then at the end you offer prayers. Yeah? And you offer yourself completely to Krishna. So this is all about culture. We see Krishna's doing the same thing here. It's not some imagination. It's not something he's made up. He's following the same culture. Because it's the culture of the spiritual world. It's the culture he's given us. And the Acharyas all emphasize that. So, you know, if we want to give up our conditioning, because our conditioning is one of the things that's holding us here in this material world, because we have this condition, because we think that I am, you know, this upadhi, that I am something, I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm Australian, I'm Indian, I'm this, I'm that. Whatever it is, it's an upadhi. And as long as we hold on to these upadhis, we're stuck here. We will not get out. So the devotional process helps us. Actually, the devotional process is the only means we can get out. Nothing else. You know, it was a mitobhidhita karatosato va, it mentions in the Bhagavatam, how the persons who are entangled in this idea of enjoying this material world, they cannot escape from this cycle of birth and death by their own endeavours, by the assistance of others, or by a combination of both. So as long as we hang on to these upadhis, as long as we hang on to our attachments in the material world, we cannot get out of the repeated cycle of birth and death. Cannot. Not possible. This is the statement of the Shastras. But if we take shelter of the devotional process, and yes, of course, you know, chanting Hare Krishna is the beginning of that process. It's the middle of that process and it's the end of the process. But there are other things we need to help us in our chanting. And we need to engage in things like deity worship. We need to engage in things like book distribution. We need to engage in things like going Harinam, you know, doing seva around the temple, because these help us to become purified. Because in order to sit down and chant Hare Krishna, one needs to be purified. Who can just sit down that you know and chant all day long? You know, Thakur Haridas would chant 3 lakh rounds a day. Or 3 lakh names, sorry, every day, which means about 170, 180 rounds. Is there anyone who can do that? Huh? I chanted 64 rounds a couple of times, and it really took a lot of work. And my mind was, the more I chant, the more distracted my mind would become, and it was more like, you know, it's like trying to fight this beast down, you know? I just wanted to go here, wanted to go there, wanted to do this, think about this, talk about that. It's very difficult. So, all these different activities that have been given to us by the Acharyas, are focused on this point. Like we see that Lord Chaitanya gave Sanatana Goswami 64 items of devotional service, which are being discussed in the Nectar of Devotion and also in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Starting off with, you know, worship the spiritual master, etc. And then, in the end, he gets to the point, he said, Sadhu Sangha Nama Kirtan Bhagavat Shavan Matura Vasa Sri Matur Shalaya Savan. He points out these 5 activities. These are the most important. If one has a little bit of attachment to any of these, you know, activities, and without offense, you know, without any offense, then these will give one perfection. So, you know, we associate with the devotees, we chant the holy name, we worship the deity, study the shastra, reside in a holy place. So these other things also are auxiliaries. They help us to get to the point of chanting Hare Krishna. We need this purification that comes from these other items. So, yeah, Krishna's he's doing this. It's not that Krishna needs to perform these activities. He's God. He doesn't need to be purified. There's no consideration of God being pure or impure. It's just not, he's transcendental, beyond all this consideration. But for our benefit, he helps us. He guides us. He gives us the example, you know. So, you know, this Vedic culture is so important. You know, we should not minimize the importance of Vedic culture in our lives and for the benefit of the whole world. So, this is probably the last time, I'm not sure, I'm leaving for India in about 10 days. My wife and myself are leaving for India. And the reason I'm going over so early is because we're starting a school in Mayapur on the 7th of December. And this school, its focus is helping devotees to become brahmanas, training devotees to become brahmanas, you know, in activity, in thought, and in consciousness, Because one can have a Brahman thread, and you can go to India, you can go to Mayapur, Vrindavan, you see so many rickshaw lawlers with a Brahman thread, and they'll tell you they're Brahmanas. But look at their activity. They're pushing a rickshaw. They're working for someone. For paisa, they're working. A Brahmana doesn't do that. And so we want to hopefully, you know, inspire others to take up Brahminical culture. And we're very fortunate because we have, you know, some very, very wonderful Brahminical devotees, Janani Vas and Pangajari, who are engaged in this school, who will be, you know, they're like the main sort of teachers. But I just want to take this opportunity to pray for the blessings of all the Vaishnavas present, that, and, you know, Radha Balabhar and Gaunitaya and Jagadguru Vasubhadra and Srila Prabhupada, etc., that they can bless us, that we'll be successful in this endeavour. Because my feeling, my conviction is that if we do not take up this Brahminical culture seriously, and not just we become Brahmanas, we become Vaishnava Brahmanas, we take up this culture seriously and apply it in our lives, then we can actually have, you know, make some serious progress in spreading Krishna consciousness in this world. We need to live our lives as ideal people. This culture gives us the guidance, but we need examples. And if we don't have examples of ideal people, just, you know, you've all had the experience when a sadhu comes to the temple and you get some association with them, you see that, you hear them speak, you see them, the way they do things, you become inspired. You think, oh, that's very wonderful, so-and-so Maharaj, very nice. You know, it's like, I mean, I often quote this example for myself, you know, someone like Radhanath Maharaj, so humble, such an unassuming person, you know, and he inspires me in devotional service. I want to be like that. Niranjan Maharaj, I want to be like that. Srila Prabhupada, I want to be like that. You know? So we need this, you know, like one becomes a Brahmana by associating with a Brahmana. We need that. We need to have that association. So by our endeavor with this school is to give devotees the opportunity to have extended association with sadhus like Janani Vas and Pampajamari. And, you know, Ananda Tirtha also, he's his sadhu, he's teaching there. So, you know, different devotees will be coming, he'll be teaching. So, and by giving devotees that association, then they'll become inspired to become like that themselves. And then it will have a follow-on effect. And so, humbly praying that you all, you know, bless us, that, not bless me, but bless the school, that it can be successful, so that we can have some effect in ISKCON and Krishna consciousness in the world in general. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions at all? Usually, did anyone hear his question over there? So Prabhu's asking about the tilak. He's saying he's heard that this is Tulsi and these are representing Krishna's feet. Yet you see the deities also wear the same tilak. Generally you'll see with deities they wear the tilak of the Sampradaya. So this is Gaudiya Vaishnav tilak, so Gaudiya Vaishnav deities will always have this. If you go to Sri Vaishnav temples, they have two, you know, the Tangalawai and the Wadakalai, they have two dominant groups, you'll see they wear the same tilak as the followers. Or you'll see with the balabs, the pushtimak, they have one that just goes like that without the leaf, you know. So the deities generally wear the tilak of the Sampradaya. Although you may see in ISKCON sometimes they have, like, especially the white Krishna deities, they'll just have the pushtimak tilak. So this is generally because that was the way they were when they bought them. In the early days, Prabhupada bought deities straight from, you know, off the shelf. And because the balabs were generally the ones who had most of the deities made, so they generally painted the deities like that. So Prabhupada just installed them, worshipped them like that. But you'll see, if you go to Sydney, Gopinath, he just has the pushtimak tilak. And so it's just the tilak of the Sampradaya. But as far as, I mean, I don't know of a description, I mean, I've never read it, saying what these different things. It means Udva Pundra, means upward going. You know, the tilak, means different. Tilak can refer, because like Radharani, she doesn't wear Udvapundra Tilak, she wears Tilak, which means painting, decorations and a dot. This is also Tilak, but Udvapundra means this. The upward, two upward going, you know, Udvapundra, two upward going lines. Yeah? And I've heard said that, you know, there's the Shiva, Brahma and Vishnu in the middle. I've heard different things, but I don't know if it's scriptural. Yeah, these different definitions. But that's the reason the deities work, because of the Tilak of the Sampradaya.
I very much appreciated your point
that
you're making about the importance of the culture. So also, I have made that observation that the more Western the country is, the harder it is just really to establish this filter culture, because you're just so bombarded by materialistic culture, which is really propagating exactly the opposite thing. And I guess this is one reason why it is so hard for Western devotees to actually remain a devotee all their life, because of the point the culture comes in. So, would you have any more, you know, apart from the things of starting the school and so on, what else can be done to really, you know, really help developing this reform of culture? I think we as a devoted community, we would really like to zoom away so much from the influence of the materialistic culture.
Yeah. My
it's just been such a difficult and hopeless.
The key to success in spiritual life, there's one single thing that will help you beyond anything else. Sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, shava shastra koi, lava matra sadhu sangha, sadhu siddha koi. As described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says that the association of devotees is the key to success. There's nothing more than that. Yeah? It says, sarva shastra koi, in all the revealed scriptures it says this, that even by a moment's association with a sadhu, one will achieve all success. So that doesn't just mean you come in and rub elbows, hey Maharaj, here you go. No, that's not what association is. Just like it says, what does it mean to take darshan of a sadhu? You know, you see it in India, they come, they look, they go away. That's darshan. No, darshan of a sadhu, because what does a sadhu do? Huh? He speaks. That's what a sadhu, that's how you tell a sadhu, not by the look. Because anyone can dress up, you know, anyone, I mean literally anyone can dress up in saffron cloth, put on a tilak and hold a danda. It's not, you know, you see, I remember, you know, it used to be quite common in this one to get the children doing it. Remember Buddha Masoka's boy in Sydney? He used to dress up with a danda and all that, you know, he'd run around looking like, and everyone thought, oh, he's so saintly and pure, but he's just a kid, you know? What does he know about it, you know? No. It's what comes out of the mouth, what's in the heart. This is what, you know, so by associating with those purified personalities, by having their darshan, which means to hear what is coming from their mouth, this is how we become purified. And we're very fortunate here in Melbourne, because I see that the sangha is steadily increasing. I've been living here now. I mean, of course, I was living here 25 years ago, but I've also been living here now for about 6 years. And I'm seeing that the community is gradually growing. So the Sangha is becoming stronger and stronger. And this is the way. It's just by establishing a Sangha. Because strength is in number. The purity is in the number. You know, if we have other examples, I mean, because we have all the practices of devotional service there, but if we have no example of devotional service and we're not a sadhu ourselves, if we're just a struggling sadhaka, and we don't have that example of devotional service, but you have so many examples of people going out there enjoying their senses and portraying that they're enjoying themselves, then this is what affects you. But if you have all these examples of all these nice Vaishnavas who are performing devotional service, and, you know, it's not like, you know, we're not sort of like, you know, airy fairy got our head in the clouds. We know that people struggle. We know that devotees struggle. But we see how they deal with their struggles. And we share that with each other. Oh yeah, I had this problem, you know, and this is what I dealt about. You know, my mind harasses me like this, and this is how I deal with it. You know, so we see all these nice Vaishnavas who are, you know, practicing devotional service, and maybe turn up just a little bit, it's just for battery's going flat. Otherwise I've got to yell. And we see all these nice Vaishnavas who are practicing devotional service, and this gives us inspiration. in devotional service. So you'll see any temple where it's weak, you can usually look at the devotees are weak in their practices. There's not many devotees there. You have one or two devotees who have to do everything, and that they do it begrudgingly, or they're not inspired by it. But you can go to a temple where there's only a few devotees, and they're really inspired in their service. They're happy with devotional service, and this is a wonderful place to be. You know, so the Sangha is important. It's so important. You cannot minimize the importance of the Sangha. So that's why, you know, Prabhupada, you know, he said for ourselves we can sit under a tree. And that's true. We don't really need it. You know, if one is actually enlivened in devotional service, you don't need a temple. But for the benefit of others, and this is part of upakara, for the benefit of others, Prabhupada went to so much endeavor. The Goswamis went to so much endeavor. Look at Radha Govinda temple. Rupa Goswami didn't need that. I mean, you know, he's completely absorbed in Krishna Prema, absorbed in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. What does he need a great big temple for? No use to him at all, but for the benefit of others so they can come and have the darshan of Radha Govinda. He did that. So we see that the great Vaishnavas, they do these things for the benefit of others. So the Sangha, this is the key. And if we can just focus, you know, together as a community and individually focus on just developing ourselves as devotees, so the Sangha becomes stronger and stronger, you'll see that people will come. People will come. They'll just be influenced. Because even if you don't preach them, the atmosphere is affected. You know, as Prabhupada talks about shabda, and he says when you make a sound, it travels around the world 7 times. Huh? That's how powerful sound is. So if that sound is the holy name traveling around the world, just like that kirtan, it has an effect. It has an effect on Melbourne. It has an effect on the world. Don't think that it's not having an effect. You know, even though you know devotees are going out, just like I was speaking to Nandamundi yesterday, and he was saying, I said, oh, how was it? He just came back and was very tough out there today. He may not be getting a result, tangible, visible result, but it has its effect. Krishna says that in the Gita. He said, it was that verse, you have the right to perform, you know, your activity, but don't be attached to the fruit of the result. That's Krishna's. He's the one who gets the result. You know, he's the one who owns the result. No, we just go out there and do our duty to the best of our endeavour and know that it has an effect. Somehow or other, it has an effect. So we see the temple is growing. And as long as devotees sincerely practice their service and, you know, work to try to improve themselves, it has an effect. You know, an interesting class I was listening to the other day, Prabhupada was pointing that out. It's like, what was he saying? Oh yeah, it's like when we speak the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, if we speak the words as they are spoken by Krishna, it is the same as Krishna speaking. It's no different. So as long as we present the philosophy without contamination, without adding our own 5 cents worth, just stick to the philosophy, it's Krishna speaking. That's why it works. It's the only reason it works, because it's Krishna speaking. Yeah? So keep that in mind when you're trying to present the philosophy to people. Just speak as you've heard it from the Gita, as you've heard it from Prabhupada. And then Krishna is speaking. And that's where the power is. Okay. Late start, so late finish. Sorry about that. Grantala Srimad Bhagavatama ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gopremanandi.